IQ skill number 10, which is the secret formula of the pros. It's all about your foundation. It's all about the preparation. One of the key distinctions of the ultra-successful persuaders is that they have taken the time to prepare ahead of time every time. Too often we take for granted that we'll be able to just go with the flow or wing it. Or we decide we'll just wait and see what happens. Why not? We've done it before. After all, we all want our communication to come across as natural and spontaneous. However, the persuader who has anticipated questions and concerns and done the homework ahead of time has a considerable edge. Such a persuader gives a more compelling presentation simply because his preparation enables him to feel more confident. When we're unprepared or simply going through the motions, we feel less sure of ourselves. Our audience will then pick up on this lack of self-confidence right away. And if you're not confident, they won't be confident either. As the Chinese proverb says, dig the well before you're thirsty. Perhaps the most fundamental of all the preparatory steps is knowing your audience and your message. Even if they have delivered the same message hundreds of times, great persuaders still review and prepare before each encounter and each presentation. So, what is your message? What do you have to share that will make the difference in people's lives? What is your main objective? The key thing you hope to accomplish? You've got to understand the big picture. Then, with the big picture in mind, you have to get more specific. Do you have a clear vision of how your product, service, or idea will help your audience? You've got to know your product inside and out, its pros and cons, and how it stacks up against the competition. What questions do great persuaders ask themselves before they go into a persuasive situation? What do you need to ask yourself to prepare and refine your message? Here's a few questions. What do I want to accomplish? How can I ensure my message is crystal clear? If I had to boil my message down to three main points, what would they be? How can I demonstrate my expertise? How can I increase my trustworthiness with this audience? Why should others care about what I have to say? What are the emotional reasons that will prompt my prospects to respond? What are the logical reasons that will prompt my prospects to respond? What is my call to action? What are some alternatives to my initial proposal? Does my plan have any potential pitfalls? What are the top five doubts or objections I will encounter? How will I respond? What information should I gather about my audience? Do I have product samples, brochures, order forms, catalogs? Do I have additional bonuses or incentives to offer in the final moments? Are there other ways I can build the value of my product, service, or idea? How can I get my prospects involved in the presentation? How is what I have to offer different from the competition? I tell you right now, great persuaders know the answers to these questions before they go into any persuasive encounter, and they review them before they go into any persuasive encounter. Know your audience. It is critical that you understand where your audience is coming from and what their needs and wants are. What do they really want to know? What are they searching for? What information can you present to bridge the gap they feel? It is important to understand your audience as a general group and also to get inside their minds as individuals. Again, at the Persuasion Institute, as we monitor top persuaders, these are some of the questions that go through their minds to help them understand their audience. This is what they're thinking. These are the questions they ask. They are putting themselves in the minds of their audience. Why do I need this? What will happen if I follow through with this? What will happen if I don't? What are my options? How will this improve or change my life? What else could I do to fulfill this need? What is this going to cost me? Where can I get the best price? When do I need to make the final decision? What will my spouse or what will my friends say? Because as Harper Lee says, you never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view. Remember, preparation is all about the questions. Questions about yourself, about your product, about your audience. And as we distill these questions from great persuaders, dig deep, learn to prepare as a foundation for your success. What are some additional questions to ask yourself about your audience? You ask yourself, who am I trying to persuade? What is their common background or interest? Who are these people? Find their demographics. Students, mothers, business people? What can I offer that they will universally care about and understand? What type of things will they be looking for to get out of my message? What key points are they likely to agree with, disagree with, or maybe be indifferent? Do I need to be aware of their political, religious, professional, or other associations? What about their education, income level, age range? Are they going to be easygoing or a demanding crowd? What laws of persuasion am I going to use? Is what I have to offer even appropriate for this audience? What is my audience's biggest challenge and how am I going to solve it? Questions bring the answers, and the answers bring you success. Another mark of a great persuader is knowing the numbers. We always hear great persuaders say, "Oh, it comes down to the numbers." Of course, as a powerful persuader, you never forget what all those numbers represent. Actual, living, breathing human beings with dreams, passions, hopes, fears, and concerns. Why is an awareness of these numbers a critical part of your preparation? Well, there are many reasons. How many people must you market to and then actually end up talking to who will become customers? In the sales world, it's called your conversion rate. For example, let's say the bottom line is that you have to have 60 people come on board, bare minimum. How many face-to-face encounters or phone contacts or whatever fits your situation do you need to yield those 60 golden people and get those face-to-face encounters? Are you going to use the internet, cold calling, seminars, workshops, classified ads, television, and radio? Or do you drop off flyers, send emails, or word of mouth? What is your system? You see, it is clear to see that knowing these numbers directly influences how and where you will channel your energies. It converts guesswork into concrete figures and systematizes what otherwise would be an aimless effort. Knowing the numbers gives you a clear starting point, a clear ending point, and the critical steps in between. Bottom line is this. Do you need to market to 1,000 people to get 100 interested people that you could talk to get 10 people into your world? Great persuaders know those numbers, and they monitor them. Are they getting better? Are they getting worse? As W. Clement Stone says, in baseball, the indicator of greatness is the batting average. In the world of sales, it's the closing average. Know your average. When it comes down to knowing the numbers or not, you will find that a poor persuader who knows their numbers will out-persuade an average but unprepared persuader every time. This is a classic example of preparation meeting opportunity. The business doesn't always go to the most deserving or the most brilliant. It goes to those who have steadily and consistently plugged along with their well-designed and well-implemented plans in hand. They have not only defined clear and specific objectives, but they have translated them into action. This is the missing piece in many persuaders' preparations. We have all heard this advice, and we know it's perfectly sound and logical, but on an emotional level, we rarely do anything about it. Another way in which an awareness of the numbers is a critical part of your success is that it keeps your motivation up in the face of discouragement. Most people just give up too soon. Now, how about a reality check? If discouraged persuaders simply understood the numbers, they would know that persistence is making those extra contacts would clinch the deals. They would know that persistence in making those extra contacts would clinch the deal. Here are the numbers. Here are the facts. 40% of persuaders admit to making no new contacts during the week. 48% give up only after one contact. Of those who attempt a second contact, 73% will give up. 85% will give up after the third contact. And 90% of those will give up after the fourth contact. The 10% of the people who persist beyond the fourth contact end up with 80% of the business. On the other hand, knowing the numbers can help you know when you should quit so you don't waste precious time and energy. Research shows that after a certain point, the effectiveness of increased numbers of phone calls declines. 1 to 2 calls, you have a 20% success rate. 3 to 4, 35%. 5 to 6, 20%. 7 to 8, 15%. More than 10, it goes down to 8%. Be persistent, but also know when it's time to move on. Next one is goals. Yes, goals. You can all whine and complain and moan, but top producers set their goals, have their goals, and can see their goals. With a clear understanding of your message, your audience, and your numbers, you are now ready to set some specific goals. Most people don't like the idea of goal setting. In fact, just the mere mention of the words make them cringe. However, there is no doubt that goal setting works. I guarantee that if you ask any highly successful persuader whether or not he used goal setting in his game plan, he'd not only answer yes, but he'd be able to tell you exactly where those goals were in order of priority, both long-term and short-term. And he'd probably pull out of his pocket and show you a list in writing. There's no doubt about it, goal setting works. And as for the serious persuader, goal setting is serious business. Great persuaders know that you can't hit a target if you don't even know what the target is. It is critical that you define what you're aiming at. now, next week, next month, and next year. It's also critical that you outline how you're going to get there. This process of refining your goals requires some organization. You'll find that you can make your system run into a much more streamlined fashion if organized thinking also extends into organized living. What is your workspace like? Could it use some decluttering? I know that some people have untidy desktops, but they still know exactly where everything is. I'm not saying your workspace must be clean and pristine for you to be an effective individual, but you've got to figure out what works best for you. And here are some questions to ask yourself. Can I find it? How long does it take me to find it? Is there a better, more efficient way of organizing it? Might I be losing credibility based on sloppy appearance and surroundings? The answer is yes. Is there technology or software I can use to simplify my task and increase my productivity? And final question, is there something I can delegate? And of course, as we monitor great persuaders, we have to talk about time management. I know you think you've heard all there is to be said about time management. But before you skip ahead, let me ask you this. Would you like to work less? Most people will answer yes. A very potent little detail that often gets overlooked is that when time is well managed, one actually works less. But I know throughout the day you're inundated with emails, visits, emergencies, memos, invoices, paperwork, annoying clients, newsletters, useless meetings, reports, voicemail, annoying boss, critical coworkers, and even frustrating employees. It's the same for persuasion. Great persuaders work less than the average persuader and accomplish more. It's the old 80-20 rule. The most highly successful people expend 20% of their effort and get 80% of the results, while the less effective folks put out 80% of the effort and only get 20% of the results. Sound unfair? Let me give you a tip for entering the world of the 20% work, 80% results. Great persuaders understand that time is more important than money. They are aware that while we can accumulate money, we cannot accumulate time. This knowledge informs how they spend every moment. They don't waste time quibbling about things that don't matter. Every ounce of energy is allocated where it will have the most impact. It really is that simple. It's not a matter of intelligence. It is just being aware and being organized. Do you realize that most persuaders are productive less than half of the day? Let's say that the wasted moments throughout the day add up to 2 hours. And let me tell you this, the research shows that for most people, it's a lot more than 2 hours. For a 5-day work week, those two measly hours add up to 40 hours a month, the equivalent of an entire work week. I mentioned earlier that successful persuaders could show you their goals in writing. This absolutely holds true for excellent time managers, because their daily tasks are their many short-term goals. It doesn't take too long before these short-term goals add up and significantly influence whether or not we're hitting our bigger goals. As you work to get a better handle on your time management, commit to scheduling and planning things in writing. This doesn't mean you have to be a rigid, uptight person. It just gives you a guide. So often the time we waste is just because we didn't have anything else to fill that time with. It's almost what they say about salary increases. They say, the more your income increases, so too will your expenses. In other words, somehow your expenses will expand to fill the new salary. The same is true of time. If you don't assign the way you're going to spend a block of time, it will get filled even if the activity has no meaning. I have noticed as I monitor great persuaders is that great persuaders never start the day until it's finished on paper. Research at the Persuasion Institute shows that only 2.9% of persuaders have a handle on time management and less than 1/3 plan their day in advance. This means there's definitely room for most of us to gain greater control over our time and how it is spent. The good news is, as you get organized, you can probably start to work less and achieve more. Commit to writing out your plans and goals the night before or first thing in the morning. Make sure the most important things in your life make it onto your list. Here are some questions to consider as you reflect on how you want your time to be spent. First question, what is the best use of my time throughout the day? What part of my day should be reserved for the most difficult tasks? Do I do the simple, enjoyable things first? Am I spending important time on unimportant things? Do I confuse being busy with achievement? Do I know my priorities? Is this knowledge reflected in the way I spend my time? Am I clear about what I want to accomplish? What can I remove from my life? Is there any redundancy in my daily activities? We all have the same amount of time each day. The first step in using your time more wisely is being aware of how your time is currently used. Persuaders waste 57% of the day with non-income producing activities. Traveling, paperwork, waiting, idle chit-chat. Sure, some of this is necessary, but top persuaders maximize income producing activities and limit or delegate non-income producing activities. At the Persuasion Institute, we have discovered the following. 4% of persuaders have perfected prospecting. 4%. 11% consistently spend each week finding more customers. 12% will ask for referrals after each visit. And understand, the referrals should compromise the majority of your business. 81% of average persuaders spend less than 5 hours a week creating new customers. Once you have a clear handle on where you stand now, you need to settle on what improvements are necessary. Compare the two. Your current use of time versus your desired use of time will help you assess what needs tweaking. You can always use the success of others as a model for your own success. So let me talk about some time management skills that successful persuaders possess. See if you can add any of these to your toolbox. Grouping and batching similar tasks, monitoring interruptions, multitasking, implementing deadlines and rewards, restricting sleep to only what is necessary, exercising, scheduling all activities and events, even catch-up time and rest time, using technology to automate their life, and have tracking systems in place so no one ever falls through the cracks. And realize it is impossible to talk about time management and not end up talking about procrastination. Why is the tendency to procrastinate so prevalent? We know it does us no good, and yet it plagues even the best of us. Just like someone who is frantically trying to cram for a final exam, putting things off until the last minute never gives the best results. Great persuaders don't have time to procrastinate. There are many different psychological factors motivating a person's tendency to procrastinate. The number one reason is fear of failure or rejection. We can call it an excuse not to perform. We often exhibit avoidance, reluctance, apathy, and rationalization when we are afraid. No matter the root of the problem, whether it be fear or something else, there are four excuses people use to justify their procrastination behavior. The first is when a person insists that everything be perfect, that all their ducks are in a row before taking the next step. These people are your classic perfectionists. There is always one more thing they need to fix or fine-tune before they can get down to business of talking to potential customers. The second common factor behind procrastination is pessimism. Always entertaining worst-case scenarios and all the reasons not to proceed. These people spend all their time worrying and negatively forecasting the future. The third type of procrastination is amiability. These are the folks who are always afraid of being too pushy, intrusive, and annoying. They avoid anything that will put them in a situation where someone might get upset, even worse, not like them. The final type of excuse maker is the superficial expert. Superficial experts fear that if they let on that they really don't possess all the skills they pretend to have, they will lose all credibility. They like being looked up to and admired from a distance, but the thought of being in a situation where they might actually have to demonstrate their purported knowledge and abilities is terrifying. It would also force them to have to actually do some work. Instead, it is easier to avoid the call of duty. So, what are some other reasons we procrastinate? Another big one is indecision. We fear being wrong and making mistakes. As much as we want to see life as black or white, good or bad, we need to let go of the need for tidy compartmentalization. Life just isn't that way. Often there are many ways of accomplishing the same thing, and there can be many right answers to any one question. Successful persuaders are good decision makers. They act in the moment. Sometimes we procrastinate because we are tired or we don't have the energy. Other times it's because our goals aren't big enough and we become apathetic. It can also be the reverse. If our goals seem too big, they will overwhelm us and we'll start to shut down. When you feel overwhelmed, the key is to break tasks down into smaller, more manageable bite-sized pieces. Yet another reason for procrastination is lack of knowledge or skill, and no motivation to acquire the knowledge or skill we lack. All these reasons are really more correctly called excuses. There is no reason to postpone an important activity. As President Theodore Roosevelt said, quote, In the moment of decision, the best thing you can do is the right thing. The next best thing is the wrong thing. And the worst thing you can do is nothing, unquote. Let's back up and look at procrastination in a more basic way. There are many fairly surface level giveaways that tell you if you're dealing with or happen to be a procrastinator. According to Dr. Joseph Ferrari, a procrastinator tends to possess these five propensities. Number one, they overestimate the time they have left to perform tasks. Number two, they underestimate the time it takes to complete tasks. Number three, they overestimate how motivated they will feel the next day, the next week, the next month, whenever they are putting things off. Number four, they mistakenly think that succeeding at a task requires that they feel like doing it. Number five, they mistakenly believe that working when not in the mood is suboptimal. The Persuasion Institute found that the following were the most common excuses that got in the way of getting the task accomplished. So let me read you this list and see if there are any here, any excuses that you can eliminate from your life. How many of these really sound familiar? Well, I'm too busy too. Fill in the blank. Well, I need to finish the paperwork. Well, it's lunchtime and no one's going to be in. Oh, it's Monday and everyone is catching up from the weekend. Well, wait, it's Friday and everyone's getting ready for the weekend. I left a message and they'll call me back. Oh, I don't want to seem pushy. Well, I need to get some office supplies before I start. Well, I have a meeting in an hour, so I can't start calling now. I need to get lunch before I can think straight. I need to check my email again in case someone has responded. Someone could have left messages on my cell phone. I better check it. No, I don't think they want my product. They won't use it. Someone else already tried before to contact them without any success. They're always in a bad mood. What if they're not interested? They'll never talk to me. Maybe I should do more research. Well, I think I need some coffee before I start. Sound familiar? Let's talk about great persuaders, techniques of great persuaders, how they discover, design, and deliver. After you assess your message, your audience, your goals, and your time management, you're ready to start crafting your presentation. This process is a simple formula. Discover, design, and deliver. Think about the following ideas great persuaders use when they're preparing their persuasive message. How much time do you have to speak? What will be the setting? Auditorium, office, classroom? How large will your audience be? Will you be speaking from a platform, in front of a microphone, or an intimate circle? What time of day will it be? Will your audience be tired, refreshed, hungry, or preoccupied? Should you consider scheduling a break in your presentation? Will there be any possible distractions that you can avoid by knowing about them in advance? Here's some examples. Maybe noise from the neighboring rooms, outside distractions, children, traffic volume, sunlight, anything you can think of that you can stop that would produce a distraction. Can you inspect the presentation venue ahead of time? Where will you present from and what will your audience's seating situation be? What equipment will be available? Do you need an overhead projector, a portable microphone, a computer, a flip chart, the internet, blackboard, dry erase board? What do you need to pull off a perfect presentation? You see, after you've considered details about space, venue, time of day, and so forth, it's time to zero in on crafting your message. The actual words you will say. Your message should accomplish all of the following elements. Let me give you the formula, five critical things to your success in a presentation based on great persuaders. The first is you need to create interest. Your audience needs a reason to listen to you. You have to generate interest in your chosen topic. Why should they care? What's in it for them? How can you help them? A message that starts with a really good reason to listen will grab your audience's attention, thereby enabling you to continue with your message. Without their undivided attention, there is no hope of getting your message across. Number two, state the problem. You must clearly define the problem you are trying to solve. The best pattern for a persuasive speech is to find a problem and then relate how that problem affects the audience. In this way, you show them why your presentation is of concern to them. Why does your audience have this problem? How does this problem affect them? Number three, offer evidence. Evidence is the support you give to your argument. Evidence validates your claims and offers proof that your argument is right. It allows your audience to rely on sources besides you. Evidence can include examples, statistics, stories, testimonies, and analogies, and any other supporting material that enhances the integrity and congruency of your message. Number four, present a solution. You have gained your audience's interest, described a problem, and provided evidence in support of your message. Now, you must solve their problem by presenting a solution. How can your product, service, or idea meet your audience's needs and wants? How can it help them achieve their goals? And number 5, provide a call to action. A persuasive message is not true persuasion if your audience does not know exactly what they need to do next. In order to solve their problem, your prospects must take action. Your call to action is the climax of your presentation. When planning and preparing your call to action, remember that the process does not have to be long and painful. It will work best if you are specific and precise. Bear in mind that the prescribed actions must be feasible. Make your call to action as easy as possible. Using this structure will facilitate people's acceptance of your message and clarify what you want them to do by addressing the logical mind. If your audience doesn't sense some sort of structure, they are likely to become confused and to seek their own solution. If you aren't clear, concise, and orderly, your audience will find someone else who is. You want your audience to remember, retain, and respond to your message. Have your points been memorable, easy to understand, and simple to follow? Your message will boil down to not so much what you say and do, but rather to what your audience remembers. So here's some final thoughts on ways you can make your message more memorable. And when it's more memorable, it will have a greater impact. Offer choices. If someone tells us exactly what to do, our natural human tendency is to reject it simply because it has been dictated. People feel the need for freedom and the ability to make their own choices. If forced to choose something against their will, they experience psychological resistance. They are then overcome with the need to restore their freedom. The solution is to offer people a few options so they can make the choice for themselves. Great persuaders prepare their choices ahead of time. If you absolutely have to limit your audience's choice to one option, you must explain the limitation. If your audience understands why a limit has been put on their freedom, they are more likely to accept a constraint. On the flip side, try not to give your audience more than 2 or 3 choices. If you offer too many alternatives, your audience will be less likely to choose any of them. Structured choices give your audience the experience of control. As a result, they will be more cooperative and committed. Effective use of options will really only give your audience one choice, the one you ultimately want them to make. For example, would you like to see the live demonstration, or do you want me to send the DVD? Either choice will work for you. Use repetition. The use of repetition is a very effective persuasion tool. We have heard that repetition is the mother of all learning. It is also the mother of effective persuasion. When something gets repeated, it gets stuck in our memory and comprehension improves. Repetition makes things familiar and people will resonate with your ideas, which will lead to a positive association. You need to repeat your message several times so your audience understands precisely what you're talking about and what you want them to do. Keep in mind that you can repeat your message several times without saying the same words over and over and over again. Great persuaders repeat, but repackage. Each time you express your point, use new evidence and new words. You don't want to sound like a broken record. Bear in mind that diminishing returns may result from overuse of repetition. You know how you feel about someone telling you a joke or story you've already heard, or about a commercial you've seen one too many times. Keep your repetitions about each point to approximately 3 references, and definitely no more than 5. And we've also learned from great persuaders that they're brief and they're simple. So you need to keep your message brief and simple. This brevity will make it clear and therefore easier to remember. Make sure your speech is articulate and intelligent, but be careful not to use obscure language. Use simple terms and jargon that are familiar to your audience. Complexity will not impress them. Rather, it will jumble your message. Make your points simple, clear, and direct. And also learn how to inoculate. Great persuaders have mastered inoculation. You see, the term inoculation comes from the medical field. Inoculation refers to injecting a weak dose of the virus to prevent a patient from actually getting the virus. The body's immune system fights off this weak form of the disease and is then prepared in case the real disease attacks. In the world of persuasion, you prepare your audience in advance about the negative things they might hear about you or your product. Your audience may also generate their own counterargument, strengthening their opposition against your message. By presenting your audience with the other side of the argument, you show them that you know how they think and feel. You will win a great deal of respect by answering questions before they're even asked. Imagine that your competition is always spreading the word that your product is the most expensive on the market. You need to inoculate your audience against these attacks. For example, you could tell them that your product is the highest quality, longest lasting, most expensive product on the market. That way, you make the drawback an important positive feature. Such arguments strategically planted in the mind of your audience will enable them to access the facts when the competition tries to badmouth you or your product. So as a persuader, make it happen. Not being prepared is like driving your car without a map, or even worse, without a steering wheel. You might get lucky and arrive at your destination, but most of the time you won't make it. Preparation is the foundation of successful persuasion. It takes extra time, effort, and discipline to hone these skills, but the results are worth it. If preparation has been last on your list of what it takes to convert yourself into a great persuader, or for some of you, missing from your list altogether, now is the time to reform. Careful, well-planned preparation will ensure that you hit the target every time. The time you spend preparing will return to you tenfold. So let me tell you a final parable as we finish up this section, about the ant and the grasshopper. In a field one summer's day, a grasshopper was hopping about, chirping and singing to its heart content. An ant passed by, and the grasshopper could tell the ant was struggling with an ear of corn he was taking to the nest. "Why not come play with me?" said the grasshopper. "Instead of toiling and working in that way, I am helping to lay up food for the winter," said the ant, "and recommend you do the same." "Why bother about the winter?" said the grasshopper. "We've got plenty of food right now." But the ant continued with his hard work. When the winter came, the grasshopper had no food and found himself dying of hunger. Meanwhile, it saw the ants distributing every corn and grain from the stores he had collected in the summer. What's the meaning? The time to prepare is before you need it. The time to learn how to persuade is before you require it.